This is fun! The FU Network.
For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus.
Welcome to Mensplaining. Men talking to men the way men really talk amongst men about being men in the 21st century, the Me Too era, and not complaining about it, but trying to figure out where we fit in, how we fit in, how we can best fit in, and how we can be the best men we can be in this modern era. I'm Stephen Kirzner, filling in for Ed DeSock, our regular host who decided to take a powder this week. And we have a large panel and an interesting topic that I don't think you can say that this is a topic that is exclusively male, though I think if you went back to when Star Wars first came out, yeah, that was an exclusively male territory, science fiction movies, or at least women did not feel the least bit comfortable coming forward and saying that they liked it. I'm glad things have changed. Today we're going to talk about respect of the new and last of the Star Wars trilogy having been released, The Rise of Skywalker. We're going to talk about whether, in fact, the powers that be should have stopped at Return of the Jedi, or was it worthwhile to continue making the prequel trilogy and the sequel trilogy, which was originally George Lucas's vision. I myself and one of our panelists are the only two that have seen the movie. I think we have different takes on it. We'll find out. But let's first meet our panel, Hafiz Nurani, a digital marketing and content consultant from Vancouver and the producer of this show. Hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Good. All right. Andrew Willis, host of Andyland Radio, which you can find streaming online. You can find, you can listen to him live, or you can listen to past shows, and I recommend you do so. It's a real hodgepodge of personality, music, and the kind of things that you don't hear enough of or experience enough of on the internet anymore or on radio. Thanks for joining us, Andy.
Thank you, Stephen. That was very sweet.
You're welcome. And you're going to stay with us through the whole show. You're not going to go turn off your mic and go get something to eat across the road?
No shenanigans. I am okay. I'm on okay. Good behavior.
Okay, very good. Also joining us, Paul Doroshenko, who is a leading crusading lawyer in BC, but also a country music superstar.
That's me.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. I'm not describing a late 1970s TV movie pilot. He legitimately is a lawyer by day and country and Western singer at night.
And I solve crimes.
And he solves crimes as well. Do you have a sidekick?
Yeah, I've got a sidekick. It's Kyla Lee.
Okay, because yeah. Oh, Kyla Lee. Okay, good, because she's really smart, because it was always the detective having a smarter sidekick was kind of a trope. So
well, it you know, Sherlock Holmes, that wasn't really the trope, and then it switched, and now, you know, here we are.
I see you as more of Remington Steele. Yeah. But most people on this panel do not even know what I'm talking about when I refer to that.
I don't remember Remington Steele.
Okay. Thank you, Paul, yeah, for joining us. Two new panelists today. Matt Turner is a dyed-in-the-wool Star Wars fan. Matt, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I am a diehard Star Wars fan. I've been a fan as long as I can ever remember. I'm also a model, actor, and currently I'm producing a sports documentary down in the U.S.
Okay, great. That's terrific. It's interesting that you're producing a sports documentary at the time that Star Wars first came out in like 78. The idea that somebody could like science fiction and sports was just no. it was just no, and the idea that somebody who would be a male model as anything other than the before in the before and after advertisements wasn't going to happen either, so shows how far we've come. So thanks for joining us, Matt. Yeah. And Andrew Gurudada. Yeah, Andrew Gurudada is somebody who I've known for quite a long time. He's a project consultant which is very vague and could involve working for the CIA, but we won't get into that. I think it's more computers. He's been a Star Wars watcher, he says, since he was 8 years old in 1977. But saying that he's a fan would be a strong word. Interesting. Andrew is the founder of the Constellation Awards, which was the late lamented Constellation Awards, which was a Toronto-based science fiction fantasy awards show for multimedia, TV, movies, and everything else. And it was Canada's premier awards show. It no longer exists, but it is there in our memories. And he's a former chairperson for several conventions, including Polaris and WhoCon in Montreal. And for that alone, I wish you my sympathies. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Thanks for inviting me, and great to meet you guys.
Okay, so we've had now, 11 Star Wars movies. We started with the original three. I remember, I'll start us off with my memory, because I was, in 1977, I was 10. And I remember science fiction at the time that Star Wars came out, everything was really antiseptic and clean. All the sets were sterling. There was shiny silver. Where there was white, it was blemishless. The costumes were usually jumpsuits done up for men and women, showing a lot of cleavage. But it was very, very, there was an antiseptic quality to it. There was a almost hoity-toity pseudoscience element to it. They weren't very adventurous. It was almost as if giving into the conventions of adventure movies was beneath science fiction. And there was also the classics of the time, like 2001 A Space Odyssey, which if you try to get a modern Gen Y or Gen Z kid to sit through, good luck. I remember trying to get my father to sit through it at the Willow Theater, and I think it was one of the best sleeps of his life. That's what science fiction was like in 1977. It was very much a very uniform view of the future or of future civilizations, all of which were very clean and pristine. And then here came Star Wars, and it was a completely different thing. It had dogfights in space, which were, according to physicists, not possible. It took the World War II trope of dogfights. It also took the tropes of Westerns, of rescuing the princess, rescuing the vulnerable, the group of ragtag heroes coming together. It pulled it all together. It was made because George Lucas couldn't get the rights to do what he wanted to do, which was a remake of Flash Gordon, which happened in 1980 and is a camp classic. He didn't do it, but he instead, George Lucas created this whole saga. And it really revolutionized not just science fiction movies, and it also revolutionized merchandising, because before Star Wars, the idea of merchandising for a movie was pretty much non-existent, because nobody bought action figures related to movies. This completely changed everything. Star Wars was a game changer. There is no question. And Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, three movies that comprise one trilogy, and each one had a different tone to it. But there was a resonance to it and an excitement. And I remember skipping school to line up for Empire Strikes Back the day that it opened. It was the first time in a movie theater that I actually looked up with my eyes as wide as saucers with a wow feeling. And like, wow, this was a revelation. Now here we are years later. And because Star Wars changed the game so much, it's now being compared against the things that it opened the floodgates for, which is interesting. Star Wars stopped at the third episode of the trilogy, which turned out to be episode 6, as we found out, Return of the Jedi. George Lucas did not intend to do any further. Things changed, and then we got episodes 1 through 3, the prequel, and now we've had 7, 8, and 9. The closing of the nine-part saga. And it really, it's hard for people who were born in the mid 80s onwards to really understand what Star Wars was, because they had never experienced the world before, like science fiction movies before Star Wars. So that's why I'm providing that context. But the most recent one came out, the trilogy, I don't know what you call it, a ninology?
Ninology.
A trilogy in nine parts.
But Star Wars, they were classics of science fiction. But if you look at classics of other types of art in history, we never had a sequel to the Sistine Chapel. We never had a sequel to the Mona Lisa. There was no demand for that. And yet, ever since Star Wars, there's been a trilogy base has been de rigueur, has been the thing. But did we really need to see the prequels and the sequels to have that resonance remain of the original three? Should they have been made is, I guess, the question. Were they made just for money? I don't know if George Lucas really was driven to tell a story, or they were made simply for money. I don't know. But let's go to the avowed Star Wars fan, Matt Turner. Matt, should they have stopped at Return of the Jedi, or were these other movies worthwhile?
Well, technically, they didn't really stop at Return of the Jedi. There was some cartoons through the 80s, and not to mention they expanded on the Star Wars lore through comic books and novels.
I'm talking about strictly feature films. There was an expanded universe in prose, and there was the Ewoks and droids cartoons. But talking strictly, and I should have been clear, talking strictly about stuff released to cinemas, should they have continued?
I mean, George Lucas, after the success of the original movies, I think had every intention of doing at least the prequel trilogy. I'm not sure about the sequel one. So should they have continued? Yes. He wanted to expand on the idea of the Clone Wars and Anakin Skywalker.
Okay. And in your opinion, based on the quality of what the movies were, the trilogy and the follow-ups, on an artistic basis, do you think that those movies had the same impact, the same quality, the same wow factor as the first trilogy?
No.
No. Okay.
No. George Lucas, for all the good he's done, he totally revolutionized science fiction. He created an entire special effects industry with that original trilogy. But for all that genius, his writing and directing of the prequel trilogy was not very good.
Andrew, you're a young fellow. And so what was the first Star Wars movie you saw?
Okay, so I saw all three of the original with all my cousins. We probably watched it at least two or three times a year, and we'd do a marathon. We'd watch all three back to back.
Okay.
And that was like my introduction to Star Wars. I thought it was just incredible. It was such a fun world. I wasn't that big of a Star Trek fan, so when I saw Star Wars, I thought, whoa, this is totally for me. Now I like both of them equally. Getting to the whole proliferation of Star Wars movies, I haven't kept up to date past, I don't know, the last, the one where Carrie Fisher was last in. I haven't watched the most recent one that just came out. But what I do know is that Star Wars had a big, giant book collection. So the Star Wars universe had dozens and dozens of books that basically are very similar to the movies, right? So we have all these movies that are out now, and really they're no different than all the books that are out there. So there were stories out there.
There is a difference. I mean, in the books, Han and Leia had twins, Jace and somebody else, Solo. And it's interesting because when Disney bought Lucasfilm, they said, hey, all those books that were written, those 30, 40 books, none of that counts.
Yeah. So there is a real clampdown on the Star Wars, of the Star Wars franchise for sure. Actually, I interviewed Bruce Valanche, who was one of the writers for the Star Wars variety show.
Oh my goodness. The one back in 1978, the Christmas special?
Yeah, this is the Christmas special. Yeah, and I asked him a lot of questions about that. And he said it was at a time that George Lucas and he didn't really fully realize what the Star Wars universe was going to be. It was still so fresh and so new. It was so unexplored that there was no forethought. And especially the movie industry that it is today, you're thinking five films out. You're thinking about, you know, doing a sequel and a prequel and doing, you know, a big franchise. But back in the 70s with Star Wars, they weren't necessarily thinking that way. So
20th Century Fox actually thought Star Wars was a turkey. When they saw it and they dumped it into theaters thinking this will just disappear, nobody was more surprised than the executives at Fox that this movie became a phenomenon.
And everyone else in between. But then when it started picking up, then you have the variety or the Christmas special like went out. And as Bruce said, then George Lucas got a little bit nervous because now it became a hit. So then now you have the stinker of a variety special, and so now he got really protective of his brand, and Star Wars, beautiful, loved it. It was a really fun world to explore.
But do you think that, would you have been happy, would you have been satisfied with what they now call episodes 4 through 6? Did episodes 1 through 3 and 7 through 9, well, you didn't see 9, 7 through 8, provide anything extra, deepen the experience of your time in the Star Wars universe? Do you think we needed them? Do you think that improved in any way or took away from the experience of the original three?
Well, do you really think we needed like a Fast and Furious like 10?
I haven't seen the first one, so I can't answer.
So there's a lot of things that, I mean, a lot of people don't need, but Arden fans, of course, really want to see how a story is going to play out, you know? So for some people, they may say, hey, it was exhausted after, what was it, the first installment, the one with Jar Jar Binks, and that was like a huge stinker, apparently. Like everyone's I loved it. I truly loved it.
Well, even with the Jedi kids with the rat tails in the back and all of that.
You know what? I think also too is because I was in middle school, right? So I just was in wonderment of this world, right? So I'm kind of a perfect mix of fan, but not to the point that I'm going to go to like, you know, a fan conference about it and really get into it. I don't own any merchandise, but I love it enough that I love to see how the stories play out. And, you know, it's a way to get a little bit ahead of life.
Okay. Let's go over to probably the other person who's closest to my vintage, Paul Doroshenko. Paul, and that wasn't meant as an insult. Paul.
He's a smooth vintage. Yeah.
Yes.
I was there in the theater when it was released before anybody had realized that it was actually
a thing.
Important film.
Yeah.
It wasn't marketed.
Have you seen the films since then?
I've seen every film except the new one.
Okay.
The Jar Jar Binks films, those that trilogy, I can tell you I like watched while I was doing dishes.
Okay. You didn't even go to the theater for it.
No.
That says a lot, doesn't it? Because were you a fan of the first trilogy?
Oh, I was like you. I was lined up for Empire Strikes Back. I mean, we skipped school. Yeah, the full Monty, downtown Edmonton, freezing my ass off to fucking see that film. And it was a great film.
Absolutely.
It was worth every second. And Return of the Jedi was also a great film. And, you know, we sat there waiting after that and nothing happened for a long time, right?
Right. Do you think that the fact that you didn't go to the theaters for episodes 1 through, okay, episode 1, because after seeing episode 1, I understand why you didn't rush for episode 2. But do you think that's a function of the fact that you're an adult with responsibilities now, that you saw, that you watched them while washing dishes, or is it that the story, it just didn't compel you? You were happy with leaving it at Return of the Jedi.
Well, it didn't have half the hype, right? People were excited about it, but it wasn't. And of course I wasn't like, you know, between the age of 9 and 14 years old when it came out, right? Either. So I was an adult, but, you know, wasn't nearly the same hype. And also the reviews came out and they weren't, you know, they said, well, this is okay. But it wasn't, I don't think it struck people as being as spectacular as the first, as the original three films that were released.
But the
last few films have been great.
You think so?
Rogue One.
Okay, I'm talking about the trilogies. Because I think that Solo was the best Star Wars movie since the original trilogy.
Solo was great.
Yeah, and Star Wars fans punished it because they didn't like the Episode 8. They wouldn't go out and see it, and they lost out on an amazing, one of the best science fiction movies I've seen in a very long time. But let's stick to the trilogy. Did you find episodes 7 and 8 really, would you call them great?
They're great films.
Okay.
They're great films. Yeah.
But if you had never seen them and it had left at Return of the Jedi, would you have been terribly disappointed?
Well, look, I mean, what's the purpose of making these films in the first place, right? It's to get people to pay money to go to the film. It's to put bread on the table. Forget art for a second. This is a capitalist venture to make money. Everybody who's involved in it is there to earn a living. The people who are producing it are there to make money. The shareholders of the corporation are there to make money. So if you can squeeze any revenue out of something, then it's worth doing. From an artistic perspective, who fucking gives a damn? I mean, like, if people want it and people will go to it, that's the important thing. This is really an issue of putting bread on the table. And if they want to keep making them for another 100 years, go right ahead.
I think you nailed it there, is that when Star Wars, the original, was being released, 20th Century Fox, as I mentioned, thought it was a turkey, and they released it to theaters hoping they would at least make their costs back, whereas the later films, so much was riding on them. And the studios had all their executives, you know, chiming in and so on. And it really became about making money, like serious money, billions. It became about commerce, whereas the first one was about, geez, I hope we can make our money back. I hope we don't lose money on it. And if you look at the opening crawl of Star Wars A New Hope, Episode 4, it's all about an evil empire and rebels fighting against the evil empire for freedom. And if you look at the opening crawl for Episode 1, it's about a conflict about taxes. and you know, it as soon as I saw that opening crawl, it's like, wow, this really reflects where George Lucas was and where he is now. He was a broke filmmaker when he made Star Wars. Well, not broke, he had American Graffiti, but he wasn't anywhere near as big. And it's all about, and it was, of course, coming off the 60s and the idealism of the 70s and fighting against this evil empire, these rebels joining together, and, you know, that kind of fraternity. And then you read the crawl for Episode 1, and it starts out about a tax dispute between alien races. And you're thinking, what the hell? And that's why I mentioned earlier, you know, you washing dishes while watching the other episodes, and asked about whether that's because of where you are in life now versus then. Because, yeah, I could tell right off the bat from the crawl, we're not starting from the same kind of place that we were with the first trilogy that I saw. Hafiz, your thoughts?
On the original Star Wars, when I saw it, I think I was, the first time I actually paid attention to it, I had chicken pox. I was 12 years old. And I was like, you know what, let me see what all this hype is about this Star Wars thing. And it's interesting, the original series almost didn't happen. I read somewhere that Spielberg and De Palma had to save the original Star Wars movie from Steven Spielberg and showed him how to make a storyline.
From George Lucas?
Yeah, yeah.
I've done a lot of reading on that. I've never read that.
Yeah, but so the original cut that he'd made was apparently so atrocious. Both De Palma and Spielberg sat him down and said, no, we got to add this, 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 and this.
That's interesting. I'd never heard that Spielberg especially had anything to do with that before Indiana Jones.
Spielberg and De Palma saved Star Wars. Apparently, there was not much of a storyline there.
But there you are sitting there trying not to scratch with chicken pox. You're watching it on the small screen, which is a very different experience than watching
it. I had it on Laserdisc. So I had it on Laserdisc and a big enough TV for the era.
Okay. And you're feeling, did you once, now you went into it skeptical. You're like, what is all this all about?
The first time I actually saw it, like knew what Star Wars was, I think was around 94. And I was visiting my cousin in New York and they were airing it on TV. And I'd just seen Jurassic Park. I'm like, what is this shit? Give me some Marvel comics and the Sega Genesis. You oldies, old guys, watch this. I don't give a shit for it. But a few years later, there was almost this buzz of a Star Wars revival starting in everyone. And that was when they just remastered everything again.
Oh, the digital remasters, yeah.
Yeah, so once the digital remasters were coming out, I'm like, okay, if everyone's raging about this, let me check it out. So I did. And I mean, I liked it at that point. I got it. I saw why people liked it. As for the new ones, look, I don't mind them doing new Star Wars movies, but you have this galaxy far, far away and you have to focus around one family the whole time.
Well, that's the story. I mean, yeah, it's like saying, well, come on, you had the TV series Dallas, but there's lots of companies in Texas that were in the oil business.
Well, I would love to see something expanded into the Sith or whatever. A saga doesn't always have to connect to the same family. It can start off at a different point entirely and carry on in and connect somehow.
So that's your complaint is that they focused on one family?
Well, one whiny family. Like
whiny?
If you look at Luke Skywalker, complete whiny. Look, all the men in that family have huge emo issues. Luke Skywalker, completely whiny, right off the get-go. I don't want to do that. Go see Yoda. I want to save my friends. And you look at Anakin Skywalker. No, I hate you guys. I'm going to turn evil and become a Sith. I mean, come on. It's just emo reaction after emo.
Listen,
reaction.
There's nobody more emo there's nobody more emo in the Star Wars universe than Kylo Ren, who was an incel in space.
Where do you think he gets it from? His grandfather.
Okay.
And his uncle.
So you don't think you would have been satisfied with the experience of Star Wars with just the original trilogy? You don't feel that the prequel and the end cap added anything to your appreciation of the story?
I like the prequel, except I thought, you know what? Jar Jar Binks, I think, ruined it for a lot of people, but I kind of enjoyed what he did to it. I have this secret belief that he's a Sith Lord, and he's just in there to cause trouble. And I think it fits if you watch that movie with that mindset.
It's interesting, whiny. Of course, The Hero's Journey was written by Joseph Campbell, which is the thing that George Lucas based the beats of Star Wars on. And then after that, everyone else did. The hero initially resists the call to action. So that could be the whininess you were talking about. But let's move on. I think we've permanently lost Matt.
Also the social justice message. In the last few, I think that just pushed it a little too much
Yeah, but how much of that was, I don't even want to get into that, but I think a lot of people were reading political messages into entertainment that I think said more about the people reading in than it did about the entertainment.
I don't know. I think it's a period of the time where now art has to have a message as well.
These things are made so far out. Like, I mean, these things are conceptualized so far out that it's hard to say that they're about present political circumstances when they were filmed 2 years or 3 years earlier and we couldn't have predicted the circumstances. But Andrew Gurudatta has something to say about what you're saying, Hafiz. Andrew?
Yeah, I'm actually going to agree quite a bit with what Fiz was saying. Maybe take it a step further and beyond to the point where you're all going to hate what I have to say. But
excellent.
To give a bit of context, so I got into Star Wars in the theater first run. I was 8 years old, And I'd already read the book first because I was a voracious reader at the time. And Scholastic Book Services, for those of you who remember those things, had this book that sounded incredibly interesting, this Star Wars thing. And I bought it, and, you know, written by in quotes, George Lucas, but really Alan Dean Foster, right?
Yeah.
And it had pieces that weren't in the movie. I ate it all up. I loved it. I saw the movie. I loved the movie. My reaction was a lot like yours, Stephen. You know, it was very groundbreaking. Those space fights, the characters that I was kind of sad that some of the what I thought were the best parts of the story that were in the book were not. They hit the cutting room floor. They weren't in it. And what Hafiz was talking about the, you know, the saved edit, it's a lot of those same scenes that kind of like were showing Luke growing up, but or not growing up, but like yearning to go out into space and, you know, seeing his friends all leave and so on. And in the book, they really kind of played on those emotions. And I don't know if that would have been easy to capture on film or not, but I know those are kind of the pieces that were cut out, and it was felt it made it for a tighter story.
You're talking about Biggs, his buddy Biggs Darklighter?
Exactly. Yeah. But he had other friends that he was meeting at the bar, you know, in on Tatooine and everything. And
talking about shooting womp rats from the land speeder.
Exactly. That's yeah.
Right. I know way more about this than I even thought that I did. Anyway, go on, please, Andrew.
So I loved it. And I thought, and even just, I mean, I didn't necessarily appreciate it from this aspect of the time, but like the cinematography is just gorgeous. The fades and cuts and editing as it ended up was brilliant. And yeah, I was really excited to see Empire, but I felt let down by Empire.
Heresy.
I told you guys are going to hate this. I felt that here I love this character, Luke Skywalker. He spends far too much of the movie training and whining and then getting defeated. And it's like, did I really want to see, you know, my hero's arm get cut off? And then he's angsting about who his father is. And it was like, it was just not, it didn't do it for me. And I like, it was, again, very cinematic. The cinematography was gorgeous again, but a lot of that, and then just it, you know, and then losing Han and losing, it just felt like a very, it was too down from the upbeat kind of, you know, happy science fiction that the first one was.
But you knew that, I mean, if you read a science fiction novel, they don't release it in sections, and so sure. You know that there's always, if the heroes aren't in great peril, what's the issue, what's the motivation
for sure.
to read
yeah.
to the end, right?
Yeah, and I just don't know if maybe, you know, me of that age was kind of, that was what I was looking for in the sequel. I think I was looking for something, you know, a bit more, where my hero was being a hero and not just kind of watching him train and gripe and being insulted by Yoda.
So. Okay. Come on. Two great things introduced in Empire Strikes Back. Lando Calrissian.
Absolutely. Yep.
And Yoda, who is one of the greatest fictional characters of all time. I love Yoda.
I think over time I've come to appreciate him, but coming out of that movie theater, you know, back then it was like, he just spent the movie insulting my hero. I didn't love it. To be honest, the only movie from the entire series that I've had a full love for since the first one is Like You, is Solo. I thought that one really recaptured kind of what I really liked the first one for.
Yeah.
But other than that, the second trilogy set, I actually like the first one, Phantom Menace. If I loved the bits with Qui-Gon Jinn and like that whole, like sort of set up and so on. And then once Anakin was there, it kind of died for me. And it was like, you know,
well, it died for a lot of people because Jake Lloyd was really not an actor.
Right. Yeah.
He was an 8-year-old kid.
But I'm not sure the way he was written, if anyone could have
Macaulay Culkin in his prime.
Perhaps. Yeah.
But imagine Land Speed Racers with Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah. In the Home Alone, in the Home Alone age. Yeah. I mean, that would have been something.
You know what? If they had Macaulay Culkin, you'd know that motherfucker's turning Sith. Look at that kid smile, though. Like, that's pure evil.
The Jedi mind tricks would have caught those guys for breaking into his home every time.
Okay. All right.
But I didn't even catch 2 and 3 in the theaters also. I waited for them to be home release. I liked 7 and 8. I like them. I didn't love them, but I like them. And I thought they had a lot of good features that I think were overlooked in some of the criticisms that you were talking about, Stephen. But I mean, they weren't wow, but they weren't as horrible as a lot of people were making them out to be. And certainly not as horrible as I felt 1, 2, and 3 were.
Well, I mean, 1, 2, and 3, and I think 7 and 8, they read an awful lot like internet fan fiction, Star Wars fan fiction. Matt, did you need, as a giant Star Wars fan, would you today be as big a Star Wars devotee if you had only seen Star Wars Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi? Did you need the episodes 1 through 3 and 7, 8, and 9 to really get to feed that Star Wars appetite?
Did I need it? No. Did I want it? Yes. Just because I love the lore and the universe that was built for Star Wars, I read the books, I played the games, I read the comics, so I would have gotten it anyways. For me, the things that have really helped foster my love for Star Wars since the original trilogy was actually the Clone Wars cartoons and the Rebels cartoons.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that the television projects and now The Mandalorian getting great reviews on Disney Plus, with Darling Baby Yoda. It seems that maybe that's the format that turned superior, just the same way that Marvel makes great superhero movies, but really mostly pretty crappy TV shows, whereas DC makes mediocre to crap movies, but makes some pretty good TV shows. Sometimes you discover that the medium, maybe the medium was just too big for the stories that Star Wars episodes 1 to 3 was gonna tell. But had you had just episodes 1 to 3, I mean, do you think that the others took away from the luster of the original? You think that it diminished it?
I think the sequel trilogy has done more to that than the prequel trilogy. I mean, I'm with you guys. Jar Jar Binks was nagging. And Hafiz, yes, he probably was the secret Sith Lord. He was responsible for giving the Chancellor emergency powers, after all. So,
that just made him an idiot. Yeah.
Right. He represents all of America.
Hey, right? Yeah. But does it take away from the luster of the original? I mean, the prequels were very shiny. They went back to the old days of sci-fi before Star Wars was around. Yeah, a little bit. They do take away a bit from the luster. They certainly expanded on the universe, which is great, but the feeling of that original trilogy is gone.
Okay.
Can't get that back.
You can't recapture it. Andy Willis, do you think that as somebody who discovered Star Wars on television, but embraced it and understood the majesty, you appreciated it, it meant something to you, do you think that the prequels and the sequels have done anything to either burnish your appreciation for the originals, or has it done anything to dilute your appreciation for that universe?
Well, first of all, I feel like I've been listening to Art Bell for the last 20 minutes. I mean, there's some deep conspiracies going around about my Jar Jar Binks, who I love. I would have to say, you know, the prequels, the sequels, the complete explosion of the franchise didn't necessarily dilute the message. Because again, you know, I was introduced to the first installment of the trilogy, which is the last the last three episodes, and then I was into the second installment, and they both complemented each other. What I like about it is that it's a story that will never end. It's going to keep going. It's going to keep expanding. There'll be more movies, more content to really get into. So I mean, you know, start with the first three. Start with the OG three. And then take it from there. And, you know, and if you don't like it, don't look at it.
See, I think that it's interesting what you say, Andy. I wish I'd been paying more attention.
I drawled on.
Yeah. No, you were fine. I just felt like taking a shot. very Sith-like of me. Or according to Andrew Gurdada, that was very Yoda-like of me. So the sequels.
The sequels, meaning like episode 5 or 4, 5, 6.
I don't know that anybody coming into the theaters who was a fan of the original trilogy could ever have really been satisfied with the experience of what they saw, because it had been built up in their head for 20 years or longer, what these characters were and what their memories were of the movies. And quite frankly, because Star Wars is such a game changer. Now, if you're younger, it wasn't a game changer, because the science fiction TV shows and movies you saw were the children of Star Wars. So it wasn't a contrast between 2001 A Space Odyssey and Star Wars for you. But it's kind of like, you know, for heterosexual males, that first time you open up a porn magazine and see a picture of boobs and that, wow! The second time you look, it's not as big a wow, and you can't be blown away the same way. So everybody, no one walked into the theater seeing the original Star Wars with expectations, whereas people walked into the prequels and the sequels with expectations, and there had formed a hardcore fan base that had created an orthodoxy as to what these movies had to be. So the buzz around them from people who had been fans, I mean, Star Wars fans turned into the new Star Trek fans. Star Trek fans that I used to hate because they treated the whole thing like a damned religion. I used to say that the difference between Star Trek fans and Star Wars fans is that Star Wars fans don't think it'll come true one day. But the devotees of Star Trek that were so focused on the microscopic aspects of Star Trek that people who just wanted to watch it to enjoy it never focused on, they were fairly obnoxious. And then Star Wars fans became obnoxious. And then because they didn't like the Last Jedi, the movie before this current one, they punished Solo. They refused to go see it as a punishment to Disney, and meanwhile denied themselves what was in the best Star Wars movie in the best spirit of the original trilogy. Because nobody can, you can't discover something twice. You know, the first time is a discovery. The second time is a revisit. You may appreciate it the second time, but it's not a discovery. And I don't know if any of these movies could have really lived up to expectations that each individual person brought to the theaters. Because when you go in, I remember seeing with my friend Michael, I remember seeing E.T. the Extraterrestrial the day it opened. It was a professional development day, no school. There had been no reviews. There was no internet to giving us hints and stuff like that about what it was. We just knew it was a Steven Spielberg movie. We went to see it. We didn't know what we were in for. We had no idea, and we're blown away by what E.T. was, and that was a moment of discovery. We didn't have any expectations, so what we saw we could judge based solely upon what we saw and our reaction to it, whereas there was no orthodoxy like has been built up around Star Wars about, well, this is what would have happened, and this is what could, and this is what happened in the books, and this is, it became such a cottage industry that it was a victim of its own success, in the sense that how can you really satisfy all these people, each coming in with their own expectations of what they wanted to see? Now, I'll say that as one of the only two people here that saw the Rise of Skywalker, I felt that they finally understood what Star Wars was about in this movie, and that the other five movies, it couldn't wash the taste of those movies out of my mouth, but at least I felt that it closed this movie, closed the trilogy in 9 parts, as Paul Doroshenko said, in a way that made it a saga which is what they always called it. It did have a beginning and an end, and it did have an appropriate end, and it rediscovered the fact that really, quite frankly, Star Wars was popular because it was basically a Western in space. We've talked about it. We've each expressed our different opinions. For my money, the best science fiction adventure movie that I saw in the last 10 years in the theaters was John Carter. And nobody gave that one a chance because the critics hated it before it came out. But I'd encourage you to watch it because it has the same epic qualities the original Star Wars did. But it's just, you know, it's a different movie. And it's based on Edgar Rice Burroughs' book, which, this is all incestuous, the character of the Jeddak, the role of the Jeddak, which is a chief in John Carter, became the Jedi name in Star Wars. You'll see a lot of the DNA of Star Wars, the original Star Wars and George Lucas's ideas in John Carter. And then the reviewers said it was just a ripoff of Star Wars because they didn't understand the history. I don't know if we came to a consensus here, but it was an interesting conversation. I think that I would have been very happy had they stopped at episode 3 and left it with the Ewok singing Yub Nub and the fireworks and all of that. Though I don't think Anakin Skywalker should ever have appeared as a Force ghost, because you don't get redemption after murdering Alderaan and all the torture that he did. But that's just my particular feeling. On that matter, Matt, your thoughts? Would you have been happy with just episodes 1 through 3? Or sorry, 4 through 6?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I've said this a lot over the last, when did Disney buy Star Wars? Anyways, the last 5 years. Star Wars fans have kind of ruined Star Wars. Disney, you know, spent billions of dollars on this franchise, and they just wanted to appease us. That's what they wanted to do. That's what they did with The Force Awakens. That's what they did with The Last Jedi. And they were punished for it. As you said, nobody went to see Solo. I did. I thought it was decent. And Star Wars fans have really just ruined Star Wars.
Well, it's like music purists.
Was episode 9?
Yes, go on.
Sorry?
I was going to say it's like music purists. Who love the, who'll say, a band? Oh, I love their original stuff, but their new stuff is shit. Because they're purists. And if you want to show that you're an actual music aficionado, you say you like the band's early stuff, but the new stuff is shit. But also the expectations on a second album from somebody who had a killer debut album, the expectations are so high, it's almost impossible to meet them. But go on, please, Matt.
100%. I'm sure the expectations for Empire, I wasn't born then, were pretty high after Star Wars, just as they were for The Phantom Menace after Return of the Jedi. And then even The Force Awakens after Revenge of the Sith. So, you're spot on. I think they probably should have stopped after, honestly, Revenge of the Sith. I was happy. Yeah, I think they should have stopped after episode 3. 4, 5, and 6 are awesome. They will never be touched by any other Star Wars movie ever. 1, 2, and 3 weren't bad. I think, honestly, especially after the prequel trilogy came out, the real Skywalker saga was about Anakin. It was never about Luke. It was about Anakin's redemption in the end, and I think that they should have just stopped there.
Well, you know, there's something to that, because when I saw the first, and thank you for saying that, for contributing to that, Matt. But when I saw episode 7, my thought was, wait a minute, they defeated the Empire, and it's been 30 years, and they're back exactly where they were at the beginning of the first Star Wars movie. There's now a new Empire, and they're rebels again. I was like, really? You people can't hold a universe and a government together for 30 years? Maybe you should let the Empire run the damn place.
I have one question.
Yes.
How many Death Stars are they going to explode? Because after they blew up the Death Star, Then they blew up the Death Star again. And then they, in the new movies, they went right to blowing up the Death Star and then starting another one again that's even bigger.
Well, in the new movies, it wasn't actually a Death Star, a free-floating thing. It was a cannon built on a planet. How many Death Stars? I don't know. I suspect that the two were all, and then they just sort of adapted the technology. Because if you don't have a...
It's always the same thing to take it down, though. A simple pipe that's overlooked in some engineering diagram.
Well, it's interesting. It'd be interesting to see what you think when you see episode 9, because there's a slight twist on it. thank you, Hafiz. Andrew Gurudatta, what are you thinking? Go on.
Yeah, to go back to what you were saying about the expectations, I think there might have been a way that they could have maybe not satisfied expectations, but certainly not set up for a letdown as much. And I'm talking about the point when Phantom Menace came out, and I'm curious what the panel might think about this, is just if they had, instead of going back to the Skywalkers, gone completely different to like a completely different character and come from the story set in the same universe, but like it kind of ties to what Hafiz was saying, like a different family, a different
You know, another group of Jedis in this massive galaxy of amazing people.
Like, because then you wouldn't have been doing all these, oh, it's Skywalkers again, and having to have all these ties to the original. It could be like a whole different story. Maybe in part 6, have it somehow come back to what we saw in the first 3 that came out. But rather than it just sort of being such a connected story, and then again in the next trilogy doing the same thing again, you know, if they'd gone someone completely different, whole new characters within the same universe. I mean, it's a huge universe, as you're saying. There's so many stories they could have told that maybe tangentially tie in, but not being so based on let's keep building on, you know, because that's, you're gonna fight against expectations every time when you do that.
Okay, and
I mean, what's
final question? Sorry, I wanted to sort of, but I want a final question to, because I want to bring this to a close, and I'll go lightning round to every panelist. But do you think that some of the mood and feeling and expectations enmity that some of these newer films met, especially since Disney bought Lucasfilm, was a reaction more to Disney's hype of the movies than it was to the movies itself? Andrew Willis.
I would say that it had to do more with just making the hype, but also too, just being a business and just trying to increase the amount of copyright that you own so you can then just resell later on.
Did it feel like there was an element of greed there, corporate greed, that maybe people subconsciously were not comfortable with?
You know, as I'm sitting here looking at the Canadian Tire Flyer and, you know, listening to all this, I would say, yeah, absolutely. It has a lot to do with that.
Okay. We're going to go over to Paul. Paul Doroshenko, what do you think? Do you think that the marketing, the hype, all that turning Star Wars into a corporate behemoth, in some ways just poisoned the well?
You know, I think it's such a different perspective coming at it from when you're 10 years old as opposed to when you're 50 years old. You're 50 years old, you're looking at it cynically. You know, you're thinking about the Disney making money and you're thinking about how long are they going to drag this out. But when you're 10 or 14 years old, you're just damn excited. You know, it's a great, exciting film. It's going to carry you away. You know, there's fantastic adventure in there. You can empathize with the whiny character because you're a whiny 13-year-old or whatever. You know, I say just keep going. You know, they put in the effort. They produce great films. They're, you know, all of them have their charm. And I don't see anything wrong with them having continued, and I think they should continue.
Okay, thank
40,
you.
40 films later.
40, okay, thank you very much, Paul. Andrew Gurudatta, do you think that the marketing, the hype, the turning Star Wars into something corporate at a time when a lot of people are uncomfortable with corporate entities and perceived corporate greed, do you think that had something to do with the cynicism around these movies?
I think that might have fueled it, but what really kind of propelled it was not so much the hype itself, but pre-reaction to the hype and sort of like, you know, commentary and YouTubing thoughts around stuff without actually seeing the stuff and basing it strictly on the hype. I think that had a big part of it as well.
Which is what we're doing, because most of you haven't seen the movie yet, the new movie. We went Thursday night, and I wasn't disappointed. But okay, thank you, Andrew. Hafiz, what do you think? Do you think that the corporate element of it was something that increased a cynicism and an expectation and changed the entire nature of the experience of seeing these movies?
Well, I mean, Disney has a history of Disneyfying anything it touches, right? Once something becomes a Disney property, it goes through the Disney sort of prism of how everything should come out in this rosy, peachy world. I actually like what they've done with The Mandalorian. I haven't seen the newest movie yet, but the last two movies, I think, absolutely sucked and they shouldn't have touched it. But I do think a lot of this hype has to do with, hey, Disney saying, hey, look, we can make money off the action figures, we can make money off the movies, and if we make an entire Star Wars land, we'll make money off that too. And I do think a lot of it does have to do with having another franchise that they can just beat to death. And hopefully they don't, because that's how the original Star Wars faded out, was when they beat it to death and had all these excessive things tied to the franchise.
You're not talking about Ewok cereal, are you? Okay.
Ewok cereal was fucking delicious.
Okay. Thank you, Hafiz. Going over to Matt. Matt, what do you think? Did the corporate involvement of and the hype color people's perceptions going in to see these movies? Matt? Hi.
Star Wars, in my opinion, has kind of been corporatized since like the mid to late 90s, when they did the special editions, the prequel trilogy, video games, all that kind of stuff. Disney, they saw a property that they could exploit, expand, whatever you want to call it. So they pointed up the dollars, since they're the only people who could, and they've tried to provide us with an experience so that they can make a return on their investment.
And do you think that affected people's attitudes? Do you think it affected people's attitudes going into the theater in ways that wouldn't have had any factor for those of us who, you know, who watched the movie, the very first Star Wars movie?
I totally bought into their hype. I'm not going to lie. Someone mentioned Star Wars Land. I've been twice. I've built two lightsabers there. So I totally bought into that hype. 100%.
All right. Thank you very much, Matt. I think that'll take us to the end of this program. We can talk Star Wars a long time, because Star Wars involves a lot of things. It involves mythology. It involves unlocking that 10-year-old inside of us that Paul Doroshenko was talking about. You see it when you're 10, and you see it when you're 50, and you have a different perspective and different life experience. The best Star Wars movie is the one that makes you forget that you're 50 and reignites that 10-year-old inside you. It's about how the world has changed. It's about how everything gets politicized into pro or anti-Trump. It's about how we feel about being marketed to and corporate hype and our reaction to it, our innate resistance to corporate hype. There's an awful lot in there in Star Wars. We've talked about a good deal of it. I personally enjoyed the last movie, The Rise of Skywalker. I thought the ending was an extremely poignant one and brought everything back to where it should have been. And I'm glad I saw it, because I really did not like the one before it, or the one before that, or the three before that. I only really liked the first trilogy. But this last one, from my point of view, it does end the story in a good way. It's not perfect, but and Daisy Ridley still has very few facial expressions, but it's good. Andrew Willis wants to say something. Okay. Andy, go ahead.
Did you get what I was saying the first time around?
I got your typing here.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sorry to interrupt this. Did you get the response in the fire round, in the rapid fire?
I don't understand what you're asking me, so just go on.
No, I'm good.
Oh, you're good? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. So thank you all for joining us in this discussion of Star Wars. I'm sure there are many people out there who are going to listen to this and go, that's not true. That's not true. Yes, it is. No, it's not. I know I shouldn't be doing impressions of diehard Star Wars fans, but that's actually not impressions. I've met them, I've talked to them, and that's what many of them sound like. But thank you very much. Go out and see it. Give it a try. Enjoy it. Those are the kind of movies that are meant to be seen on the big screen. Movies with those little buddy comedy movies with Kevin Hart, those are small screen experiences. You can wait for Netflix. But a movie like Star Wars, if you really want to appreciate it and the artistry that goes into it, go see it on the big screen. That's it. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been Mensplaining. Men talking to men the way men talk to men. About being men in the modern era. And how we can help, how we can best be the best men we can be as we go forward. Filling in for Ed the Sock. I'm Ed the Sock. Sorry. I'll have to re-edit that. Filling in for Ed the Sock, I'm Stephen Kersner on Mensplaining FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network. And I have to also point out that if you enjoyed the show, please contribute. Patreon.com/FU Network TV is where you can become a subscriber. $1 a month it starts at. It goes all the way up from there, and there are some perks that are going to be added to. But the biggest perk is that you're going to help us continue to make this program and the other programs on FU Politics continue and get better. So if you're interested in that, if you want to help us out with our own little rebellion against the media empire that has been consolidated against us, Patreon, patreon.com at FU Network TV. And if you want to just give us a one-time boost, one-time contribution, that's greatly appreciated too. That's PayPal, and you direct it to our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. I said that a bit fast. I'll slow it down. funetworktv@gmail.com. I want to thank all of you, and of course, the best way to end this with... I want to thank all of you, and of course, the best way to end this episode is, may the Force be with you. For he's a jolly good fellow.
This is Fun, the FU Network.